I don't know much about being funny on a stage. I know even less about trying to do that as a black woman in Alberta. But I do know that someone who can win over a cowboy crowd in one of Canada's whitest places by telling jokes about systemic racism has a kind of power that can be used for many things.
I'm living the racism dream, not the racist dream. If it was the racist dream, I'd be dead. Ooh, that was dark. I need a tan. Can I get one more?
Today, we will meet that woman, one of the only black women comics in Alberta, maybe the only one in Calgary. And we'll take a look at where her power comes from and how she wields it to make her province a better, more inclusive place. Oh, and also, she will crack you up, I promise. And hopefully, she'll make you think a little bit differently about where comedy and performance ends and activism begins, because it's a really blurry line, and that's a fascinating thing. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. I am so happy to be back with you after a couple of weeks off. Thanks to Fatma Syed for holding down this chair while I was gone. Today, we're going to talk to Adora Nwofor, a Calgary-based stand-up comedian, the president of Black Lives Matter YYC, and one of the subjects in a documentary that airs tonight, February 22nd, at 10 p.m. Eastern on City TV or on demand later at citynews.ca. Hello, Adora.
Hello, Jordan. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Why don't you begin by telling me about your approach to doing stand-up comedy about systemic racism?
Yeah, my approach is really just to talk about the absurdity of my experiences being born, raised, and still living the racism dream here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm also a pretty big person. I like to say I'm a giant because I'm 6'1 before shoes. And depending on the day, you know, those shoes can be 9 inches. And then I can have like another 3 inches of hair. You know, if I have like the double bang from the 80s, that's, I mean, at least 3 inches for that bang. So, you know, I take up as much space as possible, but those are the things that I like. So it seems like it's a punch in the face for people. But I mean, for me, that's normal. That's every day. That's regular. That's the girl next door. So I'm really direct and pretty sarcastic. Some people will say that I'm mean, but it's all in good fun and with a message. Like, I truly hope that people are hearing that, you know, there's a different point of view, there's room for growth. And if you're open, you can practice anti-racism and get that glow up that you need.
Give me an example of the kinds of topics that you will address head on, sort of in a way that might not even be intended to be funny, but maybe because of the setting.
Right. Well, I mean, I talk about racism. I talk about gender, I talk about transphobia and sexism, how sizism affects my life. You know, let's talk about dating. So sometimes I feel like my audience doesn't deserve that because that's really the funniest stuff. Dating and sex. and I say vagina on stage. That some people have been very upset about that one. In my set, I said it one time. I said the word vagina one time. I've already said it more times today than I did on set. And the person came back to another show and says, all you talk about is your pussy. And I was like, okay, I have one, so why not? Like, how many guys talked about their phallic? Why can't I talk about that? And really, his problem was with me saying vagina. And I was like, but I only said it once. And he said, well, we never hear that. So I was like, okay, got to say that more.
That sounds really tame for a stand-up comedy complaint.
I mean, it's Calgary. They're a little conservative. And I'm the only Black woman who's been doing comedy in Calgary consistently. The scene is not necessarily the most friendly to us. And yeah, so I talk about that kind of stuff. As far as I'm concerned, that's what you came to hear. Like, you heard all the white people talking about that. You heard all the men talking about that. So why wouldn't you want to hear it? People think I'm a groupie.
Huh.
And then I get on stage and they're shocked. I'm the talent. Apparently, I don't look how a stand-up comedian should look. So I'm just out here breaking all the rules, wearing clothes and talking about myself.
What are the audiences like? Because what you just said made me picture a very white, Western, conservative audience. Is that what you're seeing in the clubs?
Ding, ding, ding. That's what's in the clubs. But that's not necessarily where I go to perform. So I perform for all kinds of audiences because Calgary has all types of people living here, and the world needs to know that more, and Calgary needs to identify us as valuable in their city more. So I can go to a room full of Black women. So yes, happy Black Futures Month. Yay. I can interact with all kinds of people, like Folk Fest I've done, Carrie West, Reggae Fest. Like, it could be a room full of conservative white men, you know, blue collar, white collar, women, you know, trans folks. I host at burlesque events. Like, so, like, if people are willing to hear my message, I'm willing to share it with them.
How different is the core of your stand-up message from the work that you do with Black Lives Matter?
Oh, they're exactly the same.
How does that work? Tell me about that.
It seems kind of weird, hey? People are often like, I don't get it. I come from the foundation of anthropology. I know that doesn't really sound right, but that's my education. I love to see how different people live around the world and different cultures, societies, you know, lifeways. And I used comedy to save myself as a child, but I have always been focused on, you know, community. And then I really liked fashion. So all three of those things I use everywhere all the time, because they are organic to me. So when I'm doing comedy, like, I'm putting on an outfit that for me has a message. Sometimes people get it, sometimes people don't. I do my best to practice anti-racism every day, every moment. Sometimes I don't, because I have been socialized in white supremacy. And that is the same thing that I do at Black Lives Matter YYC. So when I'm on stage doing comedy, I'm trying to educate people in a funny kind of way. But, you know, I have a lot of great stories, so it's something that I have become skillful at. But then at Black Lives Matter, you know, I bring those same things to the table, you know, community, educating, and let's do it with a little bit of flair so people know that something's going on. And if I'm going to be honest, I'm probably not the greatest person to amplify myself, but I really want to amplify Black people. And turns out I'm a lucky duck. I am Black. So it's just who I am, like fashion, funny, and, you know, the fundamentals. I want people to grow. And this is the best way that I know how to do it.
You said comedy saved you as a child. How did it do that?
Oh, well, when you show up as the only Black kid and you're giant-sized, no clothes really fit, so I looked odd. There was no products, so my hair was not really great. And, you know, by grade 6, I was bigger than most of the teachers. People are afraid. Like, my body was political always. So I had to find a way to navigate going into every situation where people felt comfortable around me. So I never got to be comfortable. So comedy was a way to easily diffuse the tension. Badoom Ching. So I use that to help myself. You know, if I made a joke about being giant sized, nobody could help hurt me with that. And then people knew that I knew that I was giant sized. So let's move on. What's the next thing you're going to talk about? I'm black. Yes, I have a built-in tanning system. Your hair is awful. Well, I mean, I'm still cute. I can put hair on. What you gonna do? So, you know, sometimes it was mean. Sometimes it was mean to me. But I'm here today. So that's why comedy saved me. And, you know, I just, maybe I see the world in a different kind of way. Or maybe I process the world differently. I'm finding out maybe. So it seems like some of the insights that I have, they are not necessarily mainstream. So I'm not really hearing them all the time. You know, like by grade six, I had a size 10 foot. There were no shoes. So I was wearing boys' shoes. So, you know, I have an idea of what it's like to be dressing in drag. But that was not necessarily intentional. That was practical. Hmm. And that means that I have an affinity for people who that's their life. That's their everyday. I know how people can be cruel about it. But then I also know how fabulous transness is. So let's do that.
Well, and in your sets, at least the footage that I've seen, you can make the audience uncomfortable, especially because you can be so direct about racism. And it's interesting to hear you say that as a child, you had to make other people comfortable with your comedy. And as I guess you've grown, have you decided to turn that back on the audience as you've kind of come into your own? And what kinds of jokes work for that? What kinds of jokes make the audience uncomfortable, but also work as jokes? And how do you draw laughs out of something that can be so blunt and tough to talk about?
Well, here's the thing is that I'm just telling my story. So if folks don't like it, Calgary should have given me a better story. I've recently started saying to audiences, we don't really necessarily know each other. So this is just my story. And I wouldn't assume that you're racist, but I guess we're going to find out tonight. And like, these are the experiences I had, and I'm trying to find the humor in it while letting people know that this stuff happens. And they think that I'm saying I'm hurt, but if I'm blunt about it, I'm not necessarily telling you my feelings about it. I'm saying this happened. So my audience is really coming with their experience and whatever emotions they have to process in that, you know, moment. So women have been doing that around men and their toxicity forever. Like, I go to comedy shows and there's so much misogyny and misogynoir that I'm just like, whoo, wow. But there's a whole room full of people laughing. I see people being racist and people laughing. So why can't we laugh at the absurdity of me wanting anti-racism and not experiencing it? So, you know, the things that work around that are when you come to my shows with humility and you understand that some people are truly understanding that this is absurd. Like, I do a joke where somebody asks me, where do you come from? And I'm like, or where are you from? Because we know that that is, you know, a dog whistle, an anti-racism, a racist dog whistle. You know, if you ask me where are you from and I say Calgary, why aren't you accepting that answer? First of all, I said Calgary. I didn't say Calgary. So I know the colloquialist way to say this, like, it's I'm from here. I sound like white people. You know, I do a great Karen on the phone for me, if somebody sees me, I know that that's what they're processing. They're processing that I'm Black, and Black doesn't necessarily come from Calgary. Well, it does, because I'm born here. Why don't you believe me? Do you not think I understand?
Yeah.
I understand the question. You're speaking English, I'm speaking English. So for me, I just turned that around and I was like, if I say Calgary three times, does a rhinestone cowboy appear? Calgary, Calgary, Calgary. Jordan, we're going to wait until the cowboy gets here.
Here's a question. I heard you say in the City News documentary that, you know, you were born oppressed and grew up oppressed and are still oppressed. And I guess what I want to know is, have you seen any material improvement over the past couple of years? Because I know we've been, quote unquote, having the conversation, having uncomfortable conversations for a while now. But for someone Black who is performing in a predominantly white industry, I want to know if that actually means anything on the ground. Are things actually getting any better?
I'm going to say yes and no. People are having the conversation. Yes, we're talking about it. But does that mean that things have changed? No. Does it mean that when I go into a space and I say, hey, like, can I be accommodated? Does that happen? Not necessarily generally in the industry per se. It's probably getting better for people who have already established themselves in the industry and have already been able to say, hey, I'm valuable. You want to be a part of what I'm doing. So these are some of the things that we need to be doing. So, you know, I thank those people. I don't think that because, you know, Black Lives Matter has become a trend again, or a trend in a way that seems positive, that people are necessarily changing. And I want to say here in Calgary. So for one person or two people to get an opportunity, yeah, that's great, but there shouldn't be any more firsts. And if there are firsts, there should be 150 people in that first. Because in every position, like you said it, I'm in a majority white city. So, you know, there's already 150 white people doing what I'm doing. So when I come to the table and it's different, why can't we make some accommodation for that? Why can't you expand your mind to understand that this is another way of looking at the situation, that you have the power and you are benefiting from having that power, and quite frankly, creating a barrier on top of those two things. Calgary's really great at saying the right stuff, but I don't know if we're actually experiencing the change.
What about in the audience? Is there more of an appetite for being directly confronted with how racist this country can be? I'm going to take that as a no.
No, they totally are. They totally are. I've had an audience. I've had an audience for 11 years. Thank you, audience. Thank you, fans. Thank you, people who keep coming back and keep supporting me and telling me, yes, this is what we want to hear, because this is great. I'm laughing because you said it so, in my opinion, it sounded very seriously, you know, an audience coming to be confronted with racism. I'm just like, that's my everyday. Every day I confront racism.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I'm like, it's not absurd. Like, that's every day for me. That's every day for every Black person, period. So for an audience to come for an hour, I'm not even talking for an hour. For them to come and listen to me for 10 minutes, talk about racism in a way that they cannot hide from, because this is what people have been doing. They've been hiding from racism and saying, oh, no, it's not really there. And no, let's confront it. Let's talk about it. Let's name it so we can change it. Right? Because when we change racism, when we get rid of anti-Blackness, everything is better. Literally everything. Literally any oppression that you're going to do in this world is based in anti-Blackness. So let's get rid of that shit. What? Like, why not? That's my question to people. Like, why not get rid of anti-blackness? And that now becomes Adora is being confrontational. No. No. I've been brilliant always. I shouldn't have had to prove that. Indigenous children shouldn't have to prove that. Disabled children should not have to prove that. Immigrant, refugee, trans children, they should not have to prove that, because life is the reward. If I don't get my life, I don't get the reward. I don't want to be rewarded on a hierarchy that decides for me and is unattainable.
You know what was really fascinating to me there, and it kind of leads to my last question, is that you went from riffing on that in a stand-up way to a really impassioned anti-racist speech. And to get back to my earlier question about how you blend the two, the Black Lives Matter role and the comedian, where do you find in your act or in your public speaking that you move back and forth? Or is it just, this is it, it's natural?
Jordan, I wish that I was able to harness it and use it as a superpower. It's just natural. This is the person that I am. This is the person that I have been working on from the first breath I ever took. And I didn't necessarily know that this was the person I was going to be, but I love her dearly. I love her with every fiber in my body, and I want everybody on this earth to be able to do that same thing. So, because comedy saved me, is it something that I naturally do? You know, I see things, I process them, and then I say it, and people are like, that's funny. I didn't know I was funny, Jordan. I had no idea that that was funny. But it is. So, you know, if I can be engaging, impactful, and funny, and it changes anything for the positive, ooh, I'm down to do that. It makes me feel good. It's like an adrenaline rush. So I have always been pretty earnest and had conviction. People who know me from elementary school, the people who have shown up recently have been like, yeah, this has always been you, Adora. You've always sounded like this. You've always been impassioned like this. You've always been funny. So this is truly who I am, and I'm presenting it to the world. And that makes me vulnerable. People think that it makes me strong. Some days it is, but if I can change Black people's experience in this world for one moment, it's my honor.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. For what it's worth, you have made a positive impact on me just for having this lovely conversation. So thanks.
Jordan, thank you so much for having me. I thought they're going literal with the big show and they brought the giant, but I just thought, oh, people are hearing me. So thank you for listening.
Adora Nuofor, comedian, activist, hell of an entertainer. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Shout out to Fatma Syed for holding down this chair over the past 2 weeks. You can find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. You can, of course, find us in every podcast player that you might happen to like. If you wanted to look us up and rate us and review us and your favorite one and your second favorite one and a few more, we'd appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.